Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. Mr. John McKay, how you doing on Fair Week?
Final day of elephant ears.
Yeah, right? I mean, those are just too good to pass up. I think I'm going to enter that into my Fitness Pal for my calorie tracking, and my phone will just blow up.
Between that and funnel cakes.
Yeah, it's just that time of year. So, a great time of year, and great to see everybody, see what the kids have done this past year with the animals and stuff. And final day to knock it out, and then we are shooting right over to back to school. I mean, this is it. Seems like it snuck up on us another
Tuesday
year.
For a lot of people.
Absolutely. Well, we always like to start off with our crazy celebrity story on house of the week. So this one, really, really interesting, but this house also comes with the private airport where John Travolta has a home.
Wow.
So there is, I don't know if you've ever seen before. I think I saw it on some show or documentary. But in Florida, there's an air park, and it had a runway big enough. At one time, Travolta used to fly a 707, a Boeing 707. And so it was pretty rare to find a place that had a runway long enough to accommodate it. But this one had a 7,500-foot-long main runway that could accommodate planes as big as the Boeing 747.
Wow.
In a private air park, not a commercial airport, so that he could then park it. You can taxi right to the house. Well, the developer, the original developer of the air park, so in 1980, it was bought by from the Vanderbilt, like the Vanderbilts.
The Vanderbilts.
Had this. So the inventor of, he was a fitness guru that invented Nautilus exercise
equipment.
Oh, yeah,
I remember those machines.
Oh, yeah, absolutely crazed, you know, made hundreds of million dollars. So he bought, it was a 7,700 square foot home that Vanderbilt had and 450 surrounding acres.
Wow.
And then he proceeded to add, because what he was doing is he was chartering Boeing 707s at the time. Mm-hmm. He added an 88,000 square foot warehouse and a manufacturing complex for the Nautilus.
Wow.
Type of equipment. Then he added a banquet hall and all kinds of other exterior buildings. But him and his wife, so that was Jones and his wife, they divorced in 1989. Mm-hmm. And then she developed it into what's called the Jumbo Air Park. And so she developed it as a fly-in community for airplane owners. That's when Travolta later then bought into the complex. So it has room for 38 aviation homes. So 21 of the lots they already sold. But this sale, this $10 million sale, includes the airport and 17 of the remaining lots.
Wow.
That you could then potentially sell off to potential plane owners and stuff. I had to really dig into it at first to see. I thought it was just a house at the air park, but it is the house and the air park. So where my mind immediately went to in real estate is, what are the HOA dues
I mean,
it was not mentioned because you're buying, I'm sure, the business and the financials, but can you imagine what the HOA dues are to maintain the freaking runway and the property and everything that goes along with that? I think
that's kind of nutty.
I think that goes back to the old adage: if you have to ask,
you can't afford.
So I'm asking. I'm definitely asking for sure. So it'll be cool to see what eventually happens with that property and what that sells for. For all of the stories we list, though, I mean, $10.5 million didn't seem like it was out of line for all of the lots and control of the airport. So
yeah.
It would be interesting to see. There must be something we don't know, as Paul Harvey used to say. It'd be interesting
the
rest, the
rest of the story.
Of the story. So it'd be fun to
there's
see.
There's some ancient burial ground underneath one of the runways.
Or some people are not paying their HOA dues. Who knows? I think there's a lot, or maybe the runway needs updated. I'd hate to think what that costs. So it'll be interesting to see where that ends up and what happens there. Well, on to our local real estate story. One of the things we talked about last week is I had brought a lot of the market stats for the three different cities. We were kind of comparing Richland, Pasco, and Kennewick. And as we wrapped up that show, I call it my geek out on statistics show. But as we wrapped that up, I realized that I had gotten through about a third of it. So I thought it was prudent in at least the first half of the show today. Mm-hmm. There were a couple things that I really wanted to get to that I didn't. So this is part two of the geeky statistics, kind of just a little past mid-year check-in. Mm-hmm. Where are we at as we go to wrap up 2019? So one of the things that I did not get to talk about was where we were at with, for instance, average sales prices. So what are properties for sale? What are they asking in the three different cities? And so what does that look like as an ask price? So we'll start in Richland. Richland had the highest average for sale price. So the for sale price in July in Richland was $461,000. Was the average for sale price on what listings were active there. Now that is up 11.9%. From last July in 2018, it was only $412,000. Okay. Now, what's interesting is when we go and compare average sold price versus list price. So sold price versus list price on the averages. Now, the average sold price in July in Richland was $350,000, which is the highest of the three cities. Mm-hmm. And that is up 3% over July of 2018.
See, that would reflect the shortage of homes on the market.
Exactly. But what is also interesting about that is it looks like that the sellers in that market, and when I say sellers, a lot of them are, you know, represented by agents also there. Mm-hmm. Now, it looks like what we have happening there, and that's why I like to look into these, is we potentially have people being a little aggressive in that seller's market. Because when you look at that, they raised the asking price on average by 12%. Over last July, but the actual sold price only went up by 3%. Okay, so now we're getting, that's a pretty big statistical spread that you really want to watch out. And that's when we're going to start to see and look at where does that peak start to change a little bit? Where do things get to be too much?
As far as the asking price.
As far as the asking price. And then what will happen is I think what we'll see is that is a leading indicator of then an increase on days on the market. So when we see a big spread like that from ask price to sold price, I think what will happen is it's a leading indicator is we think what we'll actually see is we'll see days on the market start to creep up because of that. That's too big of a spread for that city. So let's take a look at Kennewick. Let's see what Kennewick did. Kennewick's average list price in July was $403,000 versus Richland, which was $461,000. Mm-hmm. Now, that represents an increase of 2%. Okay. From last year in July. And now when we look at average sold price, so ask price over all of the listings in Kennewick, 403,000. Mm-hmm. Average sold price, 332,000, which interestingly enough was up 5% over July of 2018. So if we're looking just July to July, we had an appreciation of 5% there. Now, look at the difference of what happened in Kennewick. Kennewick, more available inventory than Richland has. More new developments going on. More new construction mm-hmm. in that area. So when you look at that, now they only increased the ask price year over year by 2%. But the actual sold price increased by 5%. Richland, you're getting a little greedy. Mm. No, it's really interesting when you look at an overall market statistic like that, and mm-hmm. then and you see the difference. Lastly, but surely not least at all, let's take a look at what happened in Pasco.
And I'm sure that's a tool that you use to advise people about not overpricing your home.
We absolutely do, and we look at those ranges and the differences there, and then how that affects the sales price and how we need to adjust that. Now, Pasco, actually, the average for sale price in July, interestingly enough, was down 5% over the previous July as far as the average asking price. So once again, probably an indication of a little bit more inventory, not as many high ends in that exact month. And so what that meant was the average sold price in July, the lowest of the three cities, but still coming in at $300,000 as the average sales price in July. So, I mean, it's still those numbers for some of us are shocking that we're looking at that as the average. You know, I mean, yeah. a couple years ago, we've done numerous shows on it, was not nearly that much. So how does that relate to supply of homes and the inventory? That's another thing that we're really looking at. So another thing that we are constantly looking at is the months of inventory based upon closed sales and what's available in each city. How much inventory do we have? So Richland, and that is coming in at 1.5. So mm-hmm. only 1.5 months of inventory there. And that for us was actually a change. A few more homes did come on the market, but that was lower than last year. So than July of 2018. So 11.5% lower than the previous July. So when you look at that, inventory didn't get better, you know, in that mm-hmm. in that instance. We were still lower this July than we were the previous July in Richland. And then we're looking at the same thing. So Kennewick is running very close to that with 1.4 month supply. And that was a decrease of 6.8% over the previous. And then here's what is an interesting situation of what happened, kind of the opposite of what we saw in pricing. Mm-hmm. Months of inventory based upon the closed sales in Pasco was only 0.9. So
not quite a full month.
Not quite a full month. So absolutely, based upon the inventory that's available there, just completely cranking those sales out. Like we've talked about in the show, a buyer's market is when we have more than 6 months of inventory. Neutral market runs around that 5 to 6 months, and then below 5 months of inventory, seller's market. So mm-hmm. still, the data points to to an extremely robust seller's market and a highly competitive buyer's market. What happens and what duties does your agent owe you in that highly competitive market? That's the second most asked question we've had in the last couple of weeks. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking mid-year statistics, taking a look at the market. Still just screaming along here in Tri-Cities with our lower inventory. But it's an exciting time of year. There's a lot of newer developments that are starting to come online and open up to where I think we'll see that inventory finally start to creep back up and have some opportunities coming up for buyers. One of those is, it's crazy to think, but I mean, next month, before we know it, Parade of Homes is here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're going to start, you know, you've seen a little bit of press about that and start seeing that come out, and we'll do a show specific to talking about that and go over what's happening there. But that's also, it's an exciting, September's a exciting month for real estate. People get settled, they get back into school and their routines and start to make some decisions about wrapping up some places or moving before the holiday season and getting that done. One of the things we like to do is we like to talk about some properties that have gone active in a lower inventory market. Let's take a look about some incredible properties that we have put on the market. Pick number one that I have here. This is just an incredibly estate-like property. 83001 East Sagebrush Road in Kennewick. And this is a five-bedroom, three-bath Rambler with a bonus room, and it is on just a huge lot that has, get this, a six plus car garage.
Wow.
So 3,400, you know, 3,400 square foot house, six plus car garage. It has great room living, vaulted ceilings, barn doors, wood floors, tons of tiles. And then you go into this kitchen, crazy, big, huge island, Bosch stainless steel appliances, coffee wine bar nook, large walk-in pantry. Then you've got Anderson sliding doors onto a 26 by 20 sunroom. I mean, it just goes on and on. So this is just under an acre, 0.84, fully fenced with a block wall. And wrought iron fencing that backs up to a vineyard. I mean, the place is absolutely just incredible. Then that huge six plus garage that I talked about, they did that really cool setup where they not only have your doors on the front of your garage, but you have the rolling door on the back.
Ooh,
so you can just take the mower and all your tools out the back. So absolutely amazing. We've had those colorful sunsets this last week, you know, with the pink and purple. Anyway, this just takes all of that into account. And that's coming in at $739.9. So you just, I don't even think you can build it for that right now. And so what's there is just an incredible opportunity. If you've thought about doing a custom build with similar type specs, you're going to want to take a look at this because you can't build it for that right now. Pick number two, going out to Bend City, 10808 West Accord Road out there. And this is another just stunning panoramic views property. This is a custom four bedroom, three and a half bath house plus an office. And this one is on almost 9 acres.
Ooh.
3,587 square foot house on just under 9 acres. Gorgeous hardwood floors, main level great room concept, big fireplace, gourmet kitchen, has granite island. Absolutely. I mean, so you're getting country living, but your house feels like you're right in town with custom newer construction. You've just got lower level family room, tons of flex space, 24 by 30 shop, which Ooh. It's wired for the 220, so you can do your welding projects, McKay. and it is just that one's coming in priced at $525. So a lot of value there for that property. Pick number three, back into Kennewick, 401 West 11th. This is a move-in ready three-bedroom, two-bath Rambler that's had some awesome updates. So three-bed, two-bath Rambler, 1927 square feet, freshly painted exterior and interior, newer roof and new carpet. Fully fenced backyard, large covered wood deck and gazebo, lots of off-street parking, and that's coming in at $245,000. So we just talked about those average prices in Kennewick, Pasco being above $300,000. Mm-hmm. This is one of those rare three-bedroom, two-baths under at $245,000.
Wow.
So a lot of good new inventory that we've put on the market still. So you can find these things if you want to get a jump on those, if you want a chance of what's coming on the market new and right when it hits the market, go to kenmoreteam.com and shoot us a message. We're going to get you set up with one of our buyer's agents so that they can just be specifically working on your behalf to find that. Speaking of that, that is one of the things that is being talked about a ton in real estate right now. And we get that question. And that is, you know, what exactly does it mean when you go to work for me as my broker or as my agent? Well, what it means is that our license is governed by what's called the Law of Real Estate Agency in Washington. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there are certain duties that are spelled out legally for brokers. And so one of those, and in fact, within that section, it talks about the duties of a broker generally, and then we can talk even more specifically. It calls out what a buyer's agent must do when working for a buyer. But mm-hmm. in general, it says specifically to us, and I'll just read it so word for word so we don't mess it up and make no mistake about how it's written. Duty number A states under duties, section three, duties of broker generally, that A, the very first thing, and I think you would expect this, but it's down, is you have to exercise reasonable skill and care in what you're doing.
Hmm.
And so what does that mean? Well, for instance, one of the things that comes up and that they talk about, in fact, the Washington State Realtor's attorney, through what we have this thing called a legal hotline. Mm-hmm. She took a question this last week that said, hey, my company doesn't have a property management division, but I want to help my friend lease out their house and do the lease. Well, she wrote back and she said, okay, your license technically allows you to do that, but are you necessarily qualified to do that? Do you specialize in property management? Do you have the right leases? Do you have the experience? So that would fall under, and one of the reasons she gives that advice is because that falls under exercising reasonable skill and care. You've been educated, you've gone through, you know what you can do. So laid out right there, B is to deal honestly and in good faith. That is written down as one of our requirements as brokers in general.
Mm-hmm.
C, we come across a lot of time and people ask us questions about this all the time. C states that we have to present all written offers, written notices, and other written communications to and from either party in a timely manner, regardless of whether the property is subject to an existing contract for sale or the buyer is already a party to an existing contract to purchase.
Hmm.
What does that mean in English, Lance? That means I'm working for a buyer, mm-hmm. and we call on a property and it is under contract. It was on the market for $250,000. And it is under contract and the deal is moving forward. And so I tell the buyer that. And the buyer says to me, well, I tell you what, Lance, I want to put in an offer anyway. Mm-hmm. I want to put in a backup offer. And I want to pressure that seller to finalize that transaction with their existing buyer, or cancel, you know, if it's through inspection or whatever the reason is, and get to me. So say that the seller in that case represented both parties. Maybe they represented the buyer and the seller on the first deal. My buyer says, though, I want to write an offer, Lance. Put in an offer for $260,000, $10,000 above what the property was listed at. So when I submit that offer to the other agent, that other agent doesn't unilaterally get to decide whether they want to, you know, let's ignore the fact that it'd be unethical anyway, but they don't want, they don't get to decide, oh, I'm not going to bother the seller with this. We're already under contract in a deal. Mm-hmm. We're moving forward. There isn't even a way for the seller to get out of the current deal. So I'm just not even going to bother presenting this to them. Well, they can't do that because that would violate the law of real estate agency.
So even if a deal is moving forward, even, and there's been...
Yes.
It's not done, but there's been a contract.
Correct.
And somebody all of a sudden out of the blue in the 11th hour says, I want a shot at it. You legally have to tell everybody.
You have to present that. And the key there is in written. So if they write down, if they have a written offer and they write mm-hmm. a contract, get submitted to that other agent has to disclose that to their client and deliver that so they can see that and have access to it. So a lot of times people will ask us, well, there was an offer, but I never saw it. And I cringe at when I hear that if I'm talking to somebody, because you did you never see it because you didn't look at the email you got, or did you really never see it? Because if it was written and presented, the other agent is required to make sure that that gets in your hands and you have seen that. So that's a big part of it. The next one that comes up too is D, is to disclose all existing material facts known by the broker, mm-hmm. Not apparent or readily ascertainable to a party, provided that this shall not be construed to comply any duty to investigate matters that the broker has not agreed to investigate. Hmm. So what that means is that if I know something about a property and I'm showing a buyer to it, and maybe the buyer doesn't know that, I'm still required to disclose that to my buyer. That is going to be one of my duties. A great example of that is we pull up to a house and I get there 10 minutes early. I'm waiting for my buyer. The neighbor comes over and says, hey, gosh, crazy. I mean, I know why the neighbor's selling, because last year when the canal broke behind our house and it flooded both of our houses, God, that was a real mess. You know, we had to do all this restoration work. So, you know, the neighbor says that to me before my buyer gets there. Now, my buyer comes. You can't tell at all by looking at the property. It's all been mm-hmm. fixed. And we're walking through the house. And the buyer's like, I love this place. I think I'm going to make an offer on it. Well, as an agent, I would consider that to be a very, very readily apparent material fact.
Yes.
As an agent, so the buyer, not readily ascertainable. The buyer in that moment that I described, they have no way of knowing about that or that possibly happened. I do now.
Ooh.
And so I would be required to let the buyer know about
provided that it can be verified.
Absolutely. And so then that would be a material fact, and then we would go I would let the buyer know that, and then the buyer would go make their investigation about that. So that's just, whether that's the best example or not, that's just one of many. I mean, we could go through hundreds, but that would just be, as I'm on the fly here coming up with stuff, that would be something similar to that we would want
full
to
disclosure.
Let them know about. Full disclosure. And that's definitely what we like to deal with. So,
it's kind of like the real estate version of Carfax.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If there was, now insurance guys, we've had insurance guys on the show, mm-hmm. And they have what they call a clue report. And that is when we get into insurance. In fact, you just gave me a reminder. It's been too long since we've had a homeowner's insurance guy on the mm-hmm. show, but we should have them come on and talk about that report, because the insurance industry actually has something very, very similar to that.
So if some things have happened to the house that could potentially affect...
Correct. Like if there's been a water damage claim
the
filed,
owner can't hide it by not telling anybody.
You're absolutely correct. Mm. If they've had work done in insurance claims from past shows, we've talked to insurance agents. And yeah, we'll have them on the show and explain a little bit about that report to us. That'd be a fantastic show coming up. So those are some of the things that we are legally required to provide as services as a broker in general. And that's really what kind of can separate us just from somebody out there going out there doing it on their own accord.
Yeah.
These are things that we are held to a higher standard by that law that we have to abide by. So that's a little bit about real estate agency and some of the questions we've been getting over the last couple weeks. Looking forward to dragging myself out there to the fair. If you see me, say hi, give a shout out.
One more time.
And we will knock that out this afternoon, and then next week we will be right back here
on News Talk 870.